Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, July 13th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Celebration of the Arts. Family fun with artistic touch. 38th Annual Event to Showcase Southwestern Talent by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Shakespeare, ceramics, painting, handmade jewelry. Just a few attractions filling the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center's court level Saturday and Sunday for the 38th Annual Celebration of the Arts. After the Bush Convention Center flood in February ended its reign as the longest-running yearly event downtown, the Arts Council of Midland persevered, moving the festivities from May to July and ultimately choosing the centrally located Midland College venue. Nevertheless, the Artistic Gala runs a talented bill of fine art artists from Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Colorado. From Western-themed interactive and educational activities to the visual and performing arts, the family-friendly affair keeps all ages engaged and entertained. Local participants. 10 Midlanders and 1 Odessan will showcase their work over the two-day party. Mary Lambert, watercolor. Kayla Barker, film photography. Randy Bryant, jewelry. Ryan Minchu, knives. Olga Malden, other. Liz Bartlett Culp, oil painting. Cheryl Rausch, oil painting. Chandra Bosanak, painting. Denise Malm, mixed media. Janet Pontius, painting. Richard Acosta, photography. Must see. Located in the activities area, Jesse Trejo will demonstrate different aspects of ceramics, including wheel throwing, the procedure for forming and shaping clay on a pottery wheel, all the while facilitating a scaled-down question-and-answer session. Using East Native timber, John Welburn turns and twists wood into extravagant decorative pieces, elegantly designed for city folk and small-town people alike. Fast Facts. Address, 3600 North Garfield. Parking, next to the Chaparral Center. Price, free admission. Hours, 10 a.m. through 5 p.m. Saturday, 12 p.m. through 5 p.m. Sunday. Stats. In 2021, 6,000 people attended. So be early and stay late. This article is entitled Police, Midland Teenager Charged in Killing. 17-year-old accused of shooting man 32 during argument, according to report. By Mercedes Cordero. A Midland teen is facing a murder charge after he allegedly shot a man during an argument, according to court documents. Luis Jesus Berlanga, 17, was being held at Midland County Jail on Tuesday on a first-degree felony murder charge and second-degree aggravated assault with a deadly weapon felony charge. Total bond was reported to be $450,000. Midland Police Department officers were dispatched on July 4th at about 2:38 a.m. to Midland Memorial Hospital in reference to a gunshot victim. The victim, identified as Richard Allen Rose, Jr., 32, of Midland, was shot from the side and into the chest, according to the arrest affidavit. Detectives were notified that Rose died from his injuries at 3:01 a.m. Monday. A Midland police detective interviewed three witnesses who stated they took Rose to the hospital after Berlanga shot him. A female witness stated she was at Berlanga's grandparents' house with him when they started arguing and called her brother to pick her up, according to the arrest affidavit. The female witness's brother, Rose, and a third witness arrived to Berlanga's grandparents' house, where an argument ensued after Berlanga didn't allow the female witness to leave. Berlanga pulled a gun out of his pocket and shot Rose when he told Berlanga that they were taking the female witness with them, according to the arrest affidavit. Berlanga had fled the scene of the shooting before MPD officers arrived. Officers located 2 9-millimeter shell casings and blood on the street, according to the arrest affidavit. Detectives obtained an arrest warrant on July 4th for aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. Later that day, Berlanga turned himself in. During his interview, Berlanga stated he did argue with the female witness before her brother, Rose, and the third person arrived at his grandparents' house. He stated that an unknown male, later identified as Rose, kept interrupting him while talking to the female witness's brother. Berlanga stated that Rose punched him, and he then admitted shooting him, according to the arrest affidavit. He told the detectives he hid the gun under some stones at his grandparents' house, according to the arrest affidavit. Detectives received a phone call on July 6th from the female witness's mom, inquiring about the gun that Berlanga used. She told detectives she went through her daughter's Snapchat and saw Berlanga with a gun that looked like her gun. She also stated that her gun was stolen from her house, according to the arrest affidavit. This article is entitled, Animal Services Director Ready to Start Job. Building bonds with Midland community important to achieve animal control goals. By Stuart Doreen. Last week, the City of Midland held an event to introduce the community to its new Animal Services Director, Ty Coleman. Coleman has 10 years of animal services experience, having served in various roles, including kennel technician and field supervisor, in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. His most recent role was animal services manager for the City of Sherman. Coleman's duties with the City of Midland include planning and directing field and shelter activities, writing policies and procedures applicable to animal control issues, and enforcing animal control and City of Midland policies and procedures. Coleman participated in a question and answer with the Reporter-Telegram. Topics addressed include animal services facilities, overcrowding issues at the city's animal shelter, and working with organizations in the community. Here is the question and answer in its entirety. Reporter Telegram. What are your first impressions about facilities? What we do well here for animals and what we can do better? Ty Coleman. The facility was very well designed when it comes to the care and how animals are housed in the shelter. It encompasses isolation rooms and isolated air exchanges in each room. There is constantly fresh air that is exchanged throughout the day to ensure disease is minimalized. We would like to be able to start a volunteer program very soon that will assist us in being able to provide more behavioral enrichment programs for our sheltered animals. One program we're looking to start soon are dog play groups in our courtyards. This will help the dogs that develop behavioral issues from being caged for long periods of time. Reporter Telegram. Midland has been a community that has struggled with overcrowding at the city facility. Any measures you have in mind to help lower those numbers based on work done elsewhere? Ty Coleman. Well, first, we must switch from being reactive to proactive in the community. This takes constant proactive community education efforts along with enforcement of the loose animal ordinances. We need constant community support, which can be achieved through volunteering and responsible pet ownership. Many other cities, rescues that have experienced lower adoption rates, have adopted transport programs, moving animals to the northern part of the country where there is a higher demand for adoptions. Implementing a robust spay-neuter and targeted TNR, trap-neuter-release program, will hopefully curb our stray animal population and lower the euthanasia rate in the near future. Reporter Telegram. Are you planning any partnerships with nonprofits or other organizations to promote adoption and ease overcrowding and euthanizing animals due to lack of room? Ty Coleman. I am excited to work with the many amazing existing animal welfare organizations, nonprofits in the Midland area. Essentially, we are one team with the same goal, and they always say it takes a village. We have very passionate individuals that volunteer a lot of their time to ensure the best outcomes for the Midland animals. I hope we can work alongside each other to host off-site animal adoption events and community initiatives to ensure responsible pet ownership. Midland Reporter Telegram. Why was coming to Midland appealing? Ty Coleman. Midland has shown its commitment to keeping its small city charm and being family-oriented. I actually love the dry heat compared to the high humid temperatures we receive in the DFW, along with the crazy storms. The people of Midland are very welcoming, and it's easy to get plugged in and connected with others. I grew up playing baseball, and I love how engaged the community is in this sport. I hope to be able to coach a team one day and mentor at-risk youth needing that extra push. Reporter Telegram. Anything else you want to mention about animal services and what the community should expect? Ty Coleman. We are aiming to be able to provide premier customer service to our two- and four-legged friends, making Midland the city of choice when it comes to animal welfare. Fast Facts. Family. I come from a family of six. Half of us have either worked in or are currently working in the animal welfare industry. What was your welcome to Midland moment? I definitely enjoyed the meet and greet the city hosted for me. It was amazing to receive so much support from the community. Every day I meet someone who has recognized me from the media reports, and they are constantly praising and encouraging for continued success. Favorite local restaurant so far? I love Mexican food, and so far Abuelo's has won me over. You can never go wrong with burgers from Bob's Better Burger. Where have you lived? I have lived in the DFW area primarily in my hometown of Cedar Hill. This column is called Briefs. It's entitled, DPS says three people die in crash west of Odessa. Three people died at the scene following a collision Monday evening 6 miles west of Odessa, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that around 9:10 p.m. Monday, a 2017 Ford F-350 failed to yield the right-of-way at a yield sign at Farm to Market Road 1936 and State Highway 302. The Ford was traveling north on FM 1936 and struck a 2015 Chevy Malibu that was traveling westbound on State Highway 302. The deceased traveling in the Malibu were listed as Keithan James Gould, 40, of Farmington, New Mexico, Angel A. Rico de Leon, 27, of Big Lake, David Sines Serra, 35, of Dumas. The two occupants in the Ford were listed in stable condition at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. Maximum prison term given in sex assault of child. A Midland jury found Thomas Anthony Gutierrez guilty of 4 counts of sexual assault of a child, 2 counts of indecency with a child by sexual contact, and 1 count of assault family violence, according to Midland County District Attorney Laura Nodolph. On Monday, the jury delivered the maximum prison sentence and fine on each count, according to a press release from the District Attorney's office. Judge Leah G. Robertson of the 385th District Court then stacked the 4 life sentences for the sexual assault of a child counts, meaning that the defendant will not be eligible for parole for approximately 120 years. Assistant District Attorneys Lisa Borden and Ryan Hansen prosecuted the case for the Midland District Attorney's Office, according to the press release. Psychedelic therapy access urged in New Mexico. Santa Fe, New Mexico. Physicians and researchers are urging New Mexico legislators to allow the use of psychedelic mushrooms in mental health therapy aimed at overcoming depression, anxiety, psychological trauma, and alcoholism. A legislative panel on Tuesday listened to advocates who hope to broaden the scope of medical treatment and research, assisted by psilocybin, the psychedelic active ingredient in certain mushrooms. This column is by the Midland Reporter Telegram. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, July 13th. Albert and Ruby Gaius. In the first week of July, Albert and Ruby Gaius passed away peacefully. Ruby passed away on July 3rd at the age of 95, with Albert by her side. Al then passed away on July 5th at the age of 96, with family. Ruby is preceded in death by her parents, Robert and Onus White, four brothers, three sisters, and their children, Millie Stuckey and Daniel Gaius. Ruby was survived by her husband, Al, for 2 days. Al is preceded in death by his wife, Ruby Gaius, parents Albert and Edna Gaius, brother, sister, and their children, Millie Stuckey and Daniel Gaius. They are survived by their three grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren. Visitation will be on Friday, July 15th, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Harkey Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at First United Methodist Church on Saturday, July 16th at 10 a.m., with Beth Harrington officiating. Burial will follow at Monahan's Memorial Cemetery. Armando Mundi Viesca. Born and raised in Fort Stockton, Armando was class of 1976. Mundi and Joanne have three children, Armando Jr., Andrew Aker, David, Christina, and Chrysa Castillo Carlos, as well as four grandchildren, all of Midland and Odessa. Mundi is survived by his wife of 42 years, his three children and four grandchildren, his brothers Pete, Herlinda of Lake Jackson, Raul, Virginia of Spring, and Orlando Favi of Angleton, and sister Irma Robert of Fort Stockton, as well as many nieces and nephews. Funeral services will be held at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, July 13th at Willowbrook Funeral Home Chapel, 1311 West Florida Avenue in Midland. To place online condolences, visit www.willowbrk.com. Charles Murphy. After a long health battle and with the love of family around him, C. Richard Murphy, 78, of Snyder, passed away on Monday, July 11th. Richard will be lovingly remembered by his wife and best friend of 58 years, Barbara Murphy of Snyder. The pride of his life, his four daughters, Sharla Free and husband Brian Free of Midland, Sherry Hughes and husband Marty Hughes of Amarillo, Shayla Chapel and husband Darrell Chapel of Snyder, Shelby Venter of Snyder, as well as 11 grandchildren and two great-grandchildren. A celebration of his life will be held on Friday, July 15th at 10 a.m. at 4th and Elm Street Church of Christ in Sweetwater, with a private family graveside to follow. Visitation with family and friends will be Thursday, July 14th, from 6 to 7 p.m. in the parlor at 4th and Elm Street Church of Christ in Sweetwater. Family requests that memorial donations be made to Midland Christian School in Midland. Jafar Jeff Rahim Salehi, February 12, 1947 to June 22, 2022. Jeff is survived by his wife Deanne, his daughter and son-in-law Cameron and Winston Kelly, his two grandchildren. The family will receive guests on Thursday, July 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Branch at Nally Pickle in Welch. A celebration of his life will be held Friday, July 15th at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, with a reception to follow at the Racquet Club. His final resting place will be at his beautiful and beloved ranch in the Hill Country. in lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Vogel Center at Manor Park or to the Midland Memorial Foundation. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Judy Gail Wharton. Judy Gail Wharton, age 73 of Andrews, passed away June 26th in Andrews. Family and friends will gather to celebrate her life at 1 p.m. Saturday, July 16th at McNett Funeral Home in Andrews. Arrangements are under the care of McNett Funeral Home. Judy was born March 11, 1973, in Clovis, New Mexico, to John W. Taylor and Theo F. Warren. She is survived by her sister, Debbie Jackson, and husband, Woody, of Midland, as well as several nieces and nephews, and great-nieces and great-nephews. She is preceded in death by her parents, John and Theo Taylor, and husband, Albert Wharton. Ruth Ann Averett Griffin. We are having Mom's Celebration of Life Memorial Service on July 13th at 4 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church in Midland. After a short battle with cancer, Ruth Ann Averett Griffin, 81 years old of Midland, went home to be with her Lord and Savior on Tuesday, January 4th in Dallas, with her daughter Laura by her side. Ruth Ann is survived by her children, daughter Laura Lynn Griffin in Dallas, son Reverend Dr. Howard Griffin of Amarillo, daughter-in-law Sarah Griffin, grandchildren Hannah, Elizabeth, and John. She is preceded in death by her parents and two brothers, Ted Averett Jr. and Robert Averett. Thomas Edward Moore, Tom. Longtime Midland resident Thomas Edward Moore, Tom, passed away peacefully at home on June 22nd. Tom was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma, on March 30, 1936, to Dale and Elvira Moore. Tom is survived by his son, James Moore, wife Karen of Midland, daughters Ann Moore Jensen, husband Lance of Tustin, California, and Marilyn Moore Jackson, husband Dauphin of Austin, Texas, and four grandchildren. A celebration of life in honor of Tom will be held at Midland Country Club on Saturday, August 20th, from 4 to 7 p.m. Cremation arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Vita Harrell. In the early morning hours of July 6th, Vita Harrell passed away after battling extended illnesses. Vita was born in Midland on September 17, 1958, to Wayne and Frances Harrell. She is survived by her son and daughter-in-law, Corey and Don Henderson, and her son, Joshua Henderson, three grandchildren and one great-grandson. Two grandchildren previously passed away. In accordance with her wishes, there are no services being held. Any donations or memorials can be made in her name to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. Wynne Poss. Wynne Poss, a.k.a. Pooh, Pooh Bear, Old Pooh, Grand Pooh, Uncle Pooh, passed from his earthly home on Friday, July 8th. His daughter Jennifer was next to him. There will be a viewing from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Friday, July 15th at Robert Massey Funeral Home, with family visitation from 5:30 to 7 p.m. The celebration of Wynne's colorful and joyful life will be 10 a.m. Saturday, July 16th at Robert Massey Riverside Chapel. A farewell graveside will follow at Fairmont Cemetery. Michael Wynne Poss was born at Shannon Hospital in San Angelo on October 17, 1949, to Mary Wesley Ballard Poss and Chester Poss. He was preceded in death by his parents, his two sisters, Sue Poss Gallagher and husband Eugene, and Cyril Poss Ritchie, his sister-in-law, Martha Howerton Poss. He is survived by his only daughter, Jennifer Poss Taylor, and husband David, as well as his three beloved grandchildren, his older brother, Delnor Poss, as well as many nieces and nephews. Afterward, family and friends are invited to Pooh Corner for lunch. In lieu of flowers, donations are suggested to West Texas Rehab, Hospice of San Angelo. Death Notices. Guillermo Leon. Guillermo Antonio Alvarez Leon of Midland died July 7th. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home. There are no services planned at this time. Hortensia Almaraz. Hortensia Almaraz, 42, of Midland, passed away July 7th. Viewing is scheduled for Thursday, July 14th, at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home from 4 to 9 p.m., Rosary at 7 p.m. A Mass will be celebrated Friday, July 15th, at 10 a.m. at First Assembly of God, 100 West Wadley. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Condolences may be made at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Jose Villarreal. Jose Villarreal, 46, of Midland, passed away Monday, July 11th. Viewing is scheduled for Friday, July 15th at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday, July 16th from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. with an evening service at 7 p.m. Saturday evening. Arrangements are made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Juan Johnny Mata. Juan Johnny Mata, 55, of Midland, passed away on July 7th. Viewing will be Wednesday, July 13th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. Wednesday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for Thursday, July 14th at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Manuela Dominguez Alaman. Manuela Dominguez Alaman, 56, of Midland, passed away July 11th. Visitation will be on Tuesday, July 12th from 2 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held on Wednesday, July 13th at 10 a.m. at Iglesia de Cristo, 1501 Cherry Lane. Cremation services will follow. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Tuesday, July 12th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Local Officials Blast Biden Energy Policy. Pfluger, President making every possible wrong move as he releases more from SPR. By Stuart Doreen. Last week, Reuters reported that more than 5 million barrels of oil from the strategic oil reserves were exported to Europe and Asia, even as U.S. gasoline and diesel prices hit record highs. That oil was sent to the Netherlands, India, and China, Reuters reported. Also reported was that Phillips 66 sent crude from a strategic petroleum reserve storage site in Texas to Trieste, Italy, according to U.S. customs data. Trieste is home to a pipeline that sends oil to refineries in Central Europe, Reuters reported. What is most notable is that a third cargo headed to U.S. archenemy China, which is now directly benefiting at the expense of U.S. customers, as a result of Biden's escalating panic to undo the consequences of his catastrophic green policies by selling the most valuable U.S. assets directly to Beijing, according to an oilprice.com article. Local officials commented on the news, but were focused more on the totality of President Biden's energy policy. U.S. Representative August Pfluger, a Republican from San Angelo who also represents Midland and Odessa, said Biden continues to make every possible wrong move.
and that he has drained U.S. emergency oil supply to its lowest levels in 40 years without providing benefits to American families. Instead, it threatened our national security and enriched our adversaries abroad, including China, Pfluger said. Bloomberg reported last week, if Washington sticks to its current pace, the reserve will shrink to a 40-year low of 358 million barrels by the end of October, when releases are due to stop. A year ago, the SPR, located in four caverns in Texas and Louisiana, contained 621 million barrels. The truth is, President Biden and congressional Democrats don't have a plan to restock this critical stockpile, Pfluger said in a statement. In 2020, Senator Schumer blocked the Trump administration's request to refill the SPR at a time of historically low oil prices, calling it a big oil bailout. I'm worried environmental groups may soon urge the same strategy again. Congressional Republicans put forward legislation that would require the administration to develop a plan to replace oil drawn down from the SPR, only to be voted down by Democrats. The Bloomberg article added, as the oil market looks today, it's difficult to see how Washington can halt sales in October. Removing that additional supply would mean commercial inventories quickly deplete, putting upward pressure on oil prices. Midland's Steve Pruitt, president and CEO of Elevation Resources, said using the SPR to blunt fuel prices is futile and not the intended use of the SPR, which is for natural disasters such as hurricanes or national security issues, including wartime. The fact that 5 million barrels was exported abroad points to the real problem: inadequate U.S. refining capacity as a result of regulations around the use of renewable fuel additives in gasoline and diesel, Pruitt wrote. For those refiners lacking the renewable additives, including ethanol, they must buy RIN credits on the open market, which add to the cost of gasoline. A more effective way to reduce fuel prices is to eliminate the renewable fuel standards, which would stop the use of food products in our gas tanks, which are needed to feed the world and livestock, and reduce the use of precious water to grow corn for our gas tanks. Pruitt added that since 1992, 86 refineries have been taken out of operation or converted to renewable fuel production, accounting for over 3 million barrels per day of capacity. The Lionel Basel refinery in Houston, with 268,000 BPD of capacity, failed to find a buyer and will be shut down by the end of 2023 due to the billions of investment required to keep it in compliance with regulations. The last new refinery placed in operation in the U.S. was 1977. Richard Joswick, head of global oil analysis, S&P Global Commodity Insights, pointed out that it wasn't the U.S. government that sent the oil from the reserve overseas, but the buyers of that crude. There are no legal restrictions on what buyers of SPR crude do with the oil once they receive it, he told the reporter Telegram by email. In fact, the SPR was at least partially designed to alleviate global supply shocks, not necessarily to offset lost U.S. production. Joswick noted that oil prices are determined globally, and that oil is a very fungible commodity that is traded between suppliers and refiners domestically and internationally. He went on to list several positives to allowing SPR oil to be exported. It allows U.S. refiners to optimize grades, keeping their costs down. It allows offshore refiners to cover their needs instead of competing for other supplies which the U.S. imports, for example, Middle East or Latin American crudes. It allows offshore refiners to run more efficiently, keeping down costs on oil products that are imported into the United States, such as the East Coast, and keeping prices lower in markets where the U.S. sends products. This acts to help keep U.S. prices lower. Allowing for efficient movement of oil is in everyone's interest, and it will keep prices lower than in a more constrained market, Joswick wrote. This article is entitled, Texans' Electric Bills Rise with Heat. Consumers could see costs increase 70% since last summer. By Mitchell Schnurman, Dallas Morning News. There's no escaping rising oil prices. They've driven up the cost of gasoline, and the higher expense registers every time people fill up their tank. The price of natural gas has increased even more than crude oil, but many consumers may not have noticed. They will soon enough, in higher electric bills. How much higher? Over 70% higher than a year ago for residential customers in Texas's competitive market, according to the latest rate plans offered on the state's Power to Choose website. This month, the average residential rate listed on the site was 18.48 cents per kilowatt hour. That's up from 10.5 cents in June 2021, according to data provided by the Association of Electric Companies of Texas. It also appears to be the highest average rate since Texas deregulated electricity over two decades ago. For a family using 1,000 kilowatt hours of electricity a month, that translates into a monthly increase of roughly $80. Over a full year, that would sap nearly $1,000 extra from the family budget. We've never seen prices this high, said Tim Morstad, Associate State Director for AARP Texas. There's going to be some real sticker shock here. Customers will experience the increase at different times, depending on when their current electricity contract expires. While some cities, such as Austin and San Antonio, have regulated public utilities, most of the state operates under a competitive market. Residents choose electric plans from among dozens of private sector offers, which typically run for 1 to 3 years. As a contract ends, they must select a new one or get pushed into a month-to-month plan with even higher rates. Many people had locked in at low rates, and when they roll off those plans, they're going to be astounded by market prices, Morstad said. By his calculations, today's average residential rate is about 70% higher than what was offered a year ago. He's especially concerned about the impact on retirees living on fixed incomes. Many received a cost of living increase of 5.9% in December, but that's no match for a 70% increase in electricity, Morstad said. This is a must-pay bill. For most of the past two decades, Texans could get cheap electricity by shopping aggressively, in large part because natural gas prices were low. Power plants fueled by natural gas currently account for 44% of capacity on ERCOT, the grid serving most of the state. Just as important, gas-generated units set the market rate, largely because they can be switched on if demand surges, the wind goes still, or the sun doesn't shine. For most of the 2010s, natural gas was selling for $2 to $3 per million British thermal units. On June 2, 2021, natural gas futures contracts sold for $3.08, according to the U.S. Energy Information Administration. 1 year later, the futures price for a similar contract was $8.70, nearly three times higher. In the government's short-term energy outlook, released a month ago, natural gas prices were projected to rise sharply from the first part of the year to the second half of 2022, and it could get worse. natural gas prices could rise significantly above forecast levels if summer temperatures are hotter than assumed in this forecast and electricity demand is higher, the report said. Texas's market design has provided low-priced electricity for years, even if the grid's reliability has been suspect, as during the 2021 winter freeze. Much of the credit goes to the shale revolution, which unlocked huge stores of natural gas. From 2003 to 2009, average residential rates in Texas were higher than in the U.S., but aggressive shoppers could consistently find offers well below the average. From 2009 to 2020, Texas's average electric rate was far lower than in the U.S. More recently, energy inflation has been climbing faster here. Last fall, the Consumer Price Index for electricity in the Dallas-Fort Worth surpassed the index for the U.S. average city, and the gap has been growing. Texas has this whole mythology around cheap gas and prosperity, and those days are clearly over, said Allison Silverstein, an energy consultant who formerly worked with the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission and Public Utility Commission of Texas. Production is not increasing as it has in the past, she said, and at the end of April, the amount of stored natural gas was about 17% below the five-year average. In addition, more liquefied natural gas is being exported, especially in the wake of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And the government projects that U.S. consumption of natural gas will rise 3% this year. We're in trouble as consumers, Silverstein said. The most effective thing we can do is try to use less electricity. That means using automated thermostats, energy-efficient measures, and the like. Turn up the thermostat on the air conditioner, crank up a fan, and drink lots of water, she said. We don't have a lot of other choices. Wind and solar power are providing a growing share of electricity, accounting for a combined 38% of generating capacity on ERCOT this year. That's helping Texans consume less electricity from gas-powered plants, which are growing more expensive. Wind and solar are saving our wallets, Silverstein said. And more renewable projects, including storage batteries, are in the pipeline. But Texas has failed to invest heavily in energy efficiency, which ranges from incentivizing new heat pumps and insulation to imposing higher standards on buildings and appliances. We got used to low energy prices and fell into some complacency, said Doug Lewin, an Austin consultant who works on energy and climate issues. But this would be a good time to double down on energy efficiency as a way to help people lower their electric bills. Low-income residents can get help with bills and weatherization from the state's Comprehensive Energy Assistance Program. TXU Energy, a leader in the retail market, also has offered an aid program for over 35 years. Lewin warned of a looming affordability crisis and said lawmakers in Austin may have to step up when consumers get hit with higher rates and more electricity usage during the summer. It's a daunting problem, and I don't think our state policymakers are even half aware of it yet, Lewin said. The best way to improve prospects is to boost natural gas production, said Bruce Bullock, director of the McGuire Institute at Southern Methodist University. It's not like oil, where you can drive less, he said. It's very difficult to reduce natural gas consumption. This time of year, most of it goes to power generation, to cool homes, offices, and manufacturing plants. And if we get real hot weather, demand is going to be even higher. This article is entitled DPS, Motorcyclist 41, Dead After Crash East of Midland, by Stuart Doreen. A 41-year-old motorcyclist from Midland died Saturday evening after a collision east of Midland, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS reported that Travis John Griffin had come to a stop on his 2021 Harley-Davidson at South County Road 1110 and State Highway 158. Griffin then failed to yield the right-of-way at the stop sign marked intersection and pulled out in front of a Ford F-250 to turn left, according to DPS. The Ford then struck the Harley-Davidson. Griffin was pronounced dead at the scene. He was not wearing a helmet. DPS reported the collision took place at 11:32 p.m. This article is entitled "Man Charged with Sex Assault of Child" by Mercedes Cordero. A Midland man was arrested Friday on a sexual assault of a child charge. Jordan Golden, 28, was being held Monday at the Midland County Jail on a second-degree felony charge. Midland police officers were dispatched Friday at about 7:28 a.m. in reference to a man that wasn't supposed to be in the house. Officers found Golden with the victim in a bedroom, according to the arrest affidavit. MPD officers questioned Golden about his relationship with the victim. Officers asked him if he knew she was 16 years old. He stated the victim told him she was 22 and never had sex with her, according to the arrest affidavit. The victim was taken to the Children's Advocacy Center, and Golden was transported to the Midland Police Department, where he was questioned by detectives. Golden admitted to detectives that he did have sex with the victim, according to the arrest affidavit. Golden was being held Monday on a $30,000 bond. This article is reported "Midland Police Report Homicide" by Midland Reporter Telegram. Midland police are investigating a homicide in South Midland. The Midland Police Department responded Friday at about 11:32 p.m. to 104 South Terrell in reference to shots fired. Officers found one victim that was pronounced deceased at the scene from a gunshot wound. A second victim was transferred to Midland Memorial Hospital and was later released. Next of kin has been notified. The investigation is ongoing. This article is entitled "Recycling Center Deal Goes Before Council" by Stuart Doreen. Midland City Council will vote Tuesday on an agreement with Park Hill for engineering scope of services and associated fee estimates for design, bid, and construction administration services for a new Northeast Citizen Collection Station. The cost for the second of two new collection stations will be $310,700, according to the Council agenda documents. Those stations will be home to recycling facilities, large item disposal, and landscaping debris disposal. The city stated previously that it will put sites in Northeast and Southwest Midland. This agreement with Park Hill is for the Northeast station, which will replace the current station located in North Central Midland on Smith Road, just north of Claydesta. In anticipation of the future closure of the Air Park Citizen Collection Station site, the Solid Waste Department feels it is necessary to begin the design of the next Northeast location, stated Jeffrey Arlett, Director of Solid Waste for the City of Midland, in an agenda document. It is staff's recommendation to have two Citizen Collection Station locations to accommodate the continual growth and demand. An agreement is already in place with Park Hill on the design and construction oversight of the Southwest location. The construction documents for that site are nearing completion, according to the city. The city reports that funding is available in the FY22 Sanitation Fund operating budget. This article is entitled "Temperature in Midland Trails Other Cities in State" by Stuart Doreen. The National Weather Service reported a high temperature of 105 degrees at Midland International Airport on Monday, That was tied for the hottest day of the year. It was also the fifth consecutive 100-degree day in Midland and the sixth this month. Heading into Monday, the average high in July was 99.3 degrees, which is higher than the average for the month, generally 95 or 96 degrees, but lower than many other cities in West Texas and across the state, where the heat dome has punished Texans. For example, San Angelo reported a high of 110 degrees on Monday. The NWS also reported that the average high temperature in San Angelo had been 103.2 degrees in July prior to Monday, and the number of 100-degree or warmer days is up to 9. That included as many days at or above 105 degrees than Midland has reached 100. Monday was the sixth in San Angelo. In Abilene, the average high temperature in July was 103.7 prior to Monday. That included 9 100-degree days. A high of 106 on Monday helped Abilene secure a 10th triple-digit day. Larger cities include Dallas, where the average high had been 101.6, and there had been 9 days of 100 degrees or more. In San Antonio, the average high temperature in July had reached 100.5 degrees. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, July 12th. Dr. Caitlin Cat Claire Pause. Dr. Caitlin Cat Claire Pause passed away unexpectedly in her sleep at her home in Palmerston North, New Zealand, on March 24, 2022. She was 42 years young. Caitlin was born in Midland on May 29, 1979, the only child of Megan and Paul Pause. Caitlin is survived by her faithful greyhound Annie, her loving parents Megan and Paul Pause, and numerous aunts, uncles, and cousins. She was preceded in death by her uncle Joseph Jeffrey, her maternal grandparents, Drs. Robert and Margaret Jeffrey, and her paternal grandparents Herman and Rhoda Pause. There will be a rosary at St. Stephen's on Wednesday, July 13th at 7 p.m. A funeral mass for Caitlin will be held on Thursday, July 14th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 11 a.m. A private interment service will follow at St. Anne Catholic Church. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that memorial gifts may be made to Helping Hands of Midland. In honor of her greyhound and constant companion, Annie, you may wish to consider supporting a Place for Us greyhound rescue. Condolences and remembrances may be left on her Facebook page at www.facebook.com/CJPause. Jafar Jeff Rahim Salehi. On June 21st, Jeff Salehi had a perfect day full of his favorite things, sunshine, fruit, and playing with his grandson. On June 22nd, he unexpectedly woke up in heaven, and those that knew and loved him will forever miss him and his bright light and contagious smile. He was born in Iran in 1947. Jeff is survived by his wife Deanne, his daughter and son-in-law Cameron and Winston Kelly, his two grandchildren Cyrus and Rosemary Kelly. The family will receive guests on Thursday, July 14th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welsh. A celebration of his life will be held Friday, July 15th at 11 a.m. at First Presbyterian Church, with a reception to follow at the Racquet Club. His final resting place will be at his beautiful and beloved ranch in the Hill Country. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to the Vogel Center at Manor Park or the Midland Memorial Foundation. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Norma Jean Adamczyk. Norma Jean Adamczyk, age 79, of Koppel, passed away peacefully on Saturday, July 9th. Norma was born March 11, 1943, in Boston, Massachusetts, the daughter of Edward and Lillian Trawick. She grew up in Waco, graduated from Riker Catholic High School and 4C Business College. Norma was preceded in death by her parents, sister Evelyn Trawick, and brother Joe Trawick. Norma is survived by husband William Adamczyk, daughter Karen Gates and husband Larry of Midland, daughter Debbie Muir and husband David of Katy, and brother Edward Trawick Jr. and wife Marie, 6 grandchildren, 11 great-grandchildren, and 2 on the way, as well as nieces and nephews. Rosary and visitation will be held Tuesday, July 12th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Adderhald Funeral Home in West. Funeral Mass will be held Wednesday, July 13th at 10 a.m. at St. Mary's Catholic Church of the Assumption in West with Reverend Monsignor Henry V. Petter. In lieu of flowers, memorial may be made to Catholic Charities Dallas. A memorial guest book can be found at www.adderholdfuneralhome.com. J. Schwann, Jarrell Anders. The First Chapter of Life opened September 8, 2002. Jason was born to Shanta McMarion Price and Jonathan Anders. Jason was born and raised in Midland and attended school at the Midland Independent School District. He was preceded in death by his grandfather, Earl Watson, his grandparents, James and Shirley Watson, and Cecilia McMarion Jackson. He leaves to cherish his memories, his mother, Shanta McMarion Price, Derek, his father, Jonathan Anders, Stacy, 3 sisters, Shaderica Price, Jakisha Anders, Jakia Anders, 1 brother, Jonathan Anders, Jr., grandparents, Gwendolyn McMarion Sanders and Bonnie Ford, and a host of uncles, aunts, cousins, and friends. Receiving of family and friends will be Friday, July 15th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, July 16th at 1 p.m. at Goodwill Missionary Baptist Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchestfh.com. Death Notices. Jacob Herrera. Jacob Herrera of Midland died July 8th in Midland. There are no services at this time. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory in Midland. Maria Olga Padilla de Cano. Maria Olga Padilla de Cano, 67, of Midland, passed away July 8th. Visitation will be on Sunday, July 10th from 1 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Funeral service will be Monday, July 11th at 10 a.m. at Centro Victoria Church. Cremation services will follow. Funeral arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be received at www.asanchestfh.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.